Welcome to Resurrection Recovery, a ministry of hope and healing provided by Church of the Resurrection. This podcast is produced by Resurrection Recovery participants as a way to share their experience, strength, and hope as they move through the recovery journey. You can join us every Thursday night at 6 p.m. for a community meal and a personal story, and then support groups at 7 p.m. Check our website at core.org/recovery for special events, location, and a group that might fit your need.
All right. Hey, everybody. That's nice. Thank you. Hi, my name is Tom Langhofer, and I serve as the pastor of Recovery Ministries here, and I'm in recovery from alcohol addiction. Welcome to Resurrection Recovery. We meet every Thursday night to bring people together that have been affected by addiction of any kind, and it's a chance for us to all come together to realize that we're not alone, and to have some fellowship, and enjoy a little free pizza. And then to me, the most important thing, well, the fellowship's pretty darn important, but I love hearing people's stories, hearing their experience, strength, and hope. And man, I always learn something from people to get up and share from their heart, right? So that's what we do every single Thursday night. And we mix it up between our different support groups. We have 14 different support groups that meet here on Thursday. And on your table there, it kind of should give you, you should have one of our cards that spell out our different support groups. So this, my friend Jimmy says, man, I can pretty much, I fit about all these groups. So there's a lot of options, you know, for people to go to if they're looking for a little help. So what I like to do as a member of AA, I always like to just start our meeting off with a moment of silence and then just the short version of the Serenity Prayer. So if you'd join me in a moment of silence, I'd sure appreciate it. Thank you. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So all of our meals and all of our volunteers are all from the recovery community in some way or another. And each week, so the meals are not, they're paid for by the recovery community. So we have different organizations, different people pay for the meal every week. So this week, Cottonwood Springs is providing our meal. Yeah. Gloria Napote happens to be here. So Cottonwood is a big contributor to our recovery program here on Thursday. So thank you, Gloria. Also, just for next week's speaker is a lady named Susan Whitmore, and she runs the First Call program. She's long-term recovery, so she'll be sharing her testimony next week. And then 2 weeks, we've got a young guy, Hayden Hanna, who leads our young adult support group. He'll be sharing his testimony. He just celebrated 4 years, and it'll be his first time he's ever shared his testimony, so we're going to have to really support him. That's in 2 weeks. Last, there's a card in the back there. Some of you know Mama Judy from Healing House. She's, right, she has got stage 4 pancreatic cancer and went off treatment and is now in hospice care. So we have this big card on the table back there, and if you wouldn't mind just signing your name and just a little note to her, I'm going to take it down to her here soon. I'm trying to get as many signatures as I can on it, so I would sure appreciate that. Okay, so it's time to welcome our speaker tonight, Tina Kerwin. She leads our Al-Anon support groups here at the church. She runs several meetings and has been doing it for years and has been involved in Al-Anon for quite a long time. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Tina.
Thank you, Tom. Well, welcome, everybody. You know, I had to send a note to Tom because I heard earlier this morning that they canceled the morning groups and the afternoon groups, so I had to double check to see if we were here tonight. And for me, what that means is that these are the really committed people to recovery here tonight. You know, these are the people that are going to get here no matter what. And so I'm really honored, humbled, and grateful to be here tonight, especially the way the weather is. So I, as Tom said, I chair Al-Anon. Nobody can hear me? Okay, now you can hear me. I was hoping not to have this thing squeak in my ears or your ears either. So I've been chairing the Al-Anon group here for quite a while. The group has actually been in existence for 15 years here, believe it or not. And I've watched it grow big, and I've watched it dwindle off. And now I'm pleased to say that we have three groups here during the week. And I have a real commitment and passion for my recovery. I grew up in an alcoholic home. So how can I explain that to you? I guess the best way to explain it is the first time I remember that, I recognized that there was something wrong in my family, desperately wrong, was probably when I was maybe in grade school. But I think the drinking had been going on for the entire time my parents had been married. The memory that I have is kindergarten. I don't remember much before that. And I think that that's pretty significant to me that I even remember kindergarten. Because with Al-Anon, just as with AA, we have a disease, a family disease. So we say in Al-Anon that friends and family members of alcoholics are always welcome in our meetings. And I really kind of open it up to anybody that's been affected by substance abuse. And mostly, I think that this program can help anybody. It all depends on what you are looking for. So when I lived in my home growing up, what I remember was that the attitudes and perspectives were pretty negative. I remember that what happened during the week was, and I don't think it was every week, but many weeks when my dad was working, it would be time for him to come home and he just wouldn't show up. There was no call or anything. And then I remembered the anxiety that my mom experienced and the fear that came out for whatever reason. I'm not sure where that came from. But I think she was fearful about what was going on, where he was, you know, what he was doing. And I'm sure that if you've ever heard of codependency, I'm sure that that played a part in that. So he just wouldn't show up. He wouldn't come home. And what I remember is that my mom was pretty consumed with where is he at and what is he doing. And I talk sometimes in my meetings about kind of a family drama. So for instance, imagine in the middle of this room on one of these tables, we have somebody from the other side of the program with a substance abuse or an alcohol addiction. And they're standing on that table, and they're reaching up for the ceiling, and they're saying, all I want is a drink. Somebody just get me a drink. Somebody just pour me a drink. And for what that meant what that means for me is the intense compulsion that this disease has. And when I first came into the program, I truly didn't believe that this was a disease. I had grown up that, and in society, I think that we're taught that when we have a problem, we're supposed to solve it ourselves. And so we're pretty self-reliant. So even though I had been brought up in a home with this disease, I was pretty lost. How can I put it? Lost. I felt, and I tell people when they come into the meeting that it's like losing your life. So anyway, we have this person with the substance abuse on the table raising their hand saying that. Then we have us as friends and family members, and it's usually the most significant person to that person. And that person is pulling on their sleeve saying, I can help you. Pay attention to me. I'll help you. And then we have everybody else, all the friends, usually children first, going around, kind of just kind of scattered and running. And they're kind of lost. And that's how I see the family disease. It, when I came to Al-Anon, and I came into the program in 1986, I was 31 years old. What I experienced growing up was that I knew that there was something desperately wrong, and I knew that I didn't want to live that way the rest of my life. So I had no idea about AA or Al-Anon at 31 years old. I had a friend that I talked to in my adult years, and that friend listened to me tell him about my problems that were going on. So, for instance, I went to nursing school, and I finally moved out of my home. My mother was not really for that, but my dad said, sure, we can manage that. And I still lived here in the city. But I would get a daily call from my mother to let me know what was going on at home. She'd give me the whole scenario about what was going on at home and how upsetting it was. And it kept me kind of tied up in that whole disease process. But I didn't believe it was a disease when I got into the program. I told you that I felt like I had to be self-reliant. And I had I thought if you could see what these substances are doing to your lives, then why wouldn't you want to quit? So I sure didn't get that obsession and compulsion that is a big part of this disease, and this disease for the person that has the substance abuse and the disease for the family and friends. So Anyway, there was a lot of drama growing up. How I finally learned about the disease is when I got here in 1986. After I told my friend about those things going on at home, he said, well, I know about this program and you might benefit from it. I was scared to death. Because with this disease, what we learn is not to do not talk, do not feel, do not trust. And I say that because I came into the program from the perspective there's an offshoot of Al-Anon called Adults, Children of Alcoholics. And that's how I came into the program. And that worked pretty well for a while. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But when I got to the program and started learning about how this is a compulsion and obsession, and I began to think about how, and this is how I talk to people that come to new meetings or newcomer meetings, I say to them that that alcoholism is a disease, and we are affected by it in that when we first get to Al-Anon, what we think is somebody's going to give us the answer on how to get somebody sober. So we're really pretty focused in on other people, and especially the person with the substance abuse in our families. That's what we see as being wrong. So I was in that program for, I don't know, maybe 6 months, and then I met my husband. But I'm going to go back a little bit and tell you about how it was growing up and what brought me here. And so I told you there was a good deal of drama. What I recall is that I had that intuition that something was wrong. You'll have to bear with me. I want to share with you also that with people that have substance abuse, at least one in four people are affected by that, by our disease, the family disease of alcoholism. And so I say family disease. So we come in and we're thinking that somebody's going to tell us how to get that person sober, because that's our focus. For an Al-Anon person, our focus is out here. We are focused on everybody out here, and for me, I was pretty dependent on people, and talk about codependency. The thing was, it was not, I was a healthy person, you were a healthy person, and we came together to have a friend relationship. What happened is, when we came together, we were dependent. How I felt, or how you felt, was dependent upon how the other person was feeling. So for me, however somebody else was feeling or thinking or believing, that's where I got my information from, and that's how I live my life. So I grew up in that family, and at about the age of 12 or 13, my sister then started using drugs. And we had bedrooms in the basement of our home. My parents were upstairs. And my sister, shortly before she passed away, and she was 13 months younger than me, she passed away at the age of 53. But anyway, she began using drugs. And when she got to be an adult, and shortly before she passed away, she told me that somebody that we babysat for raped her and got her kind of introduced her to marijuana. And from there, she just kind of went on that way. She was in the sub-basement. I lived in a room next to the garage. The thing is that she would smoke marijuana, and she'd go into where the drain was, and she'd be stuffing the stubs, and you guys probably know it as a different term. I'm not familiar with that term, but she'd be stuffing them down the drain. And so pretty soon the drain stopped up, and my parents went down there to unstop the drain, and that's what they found. Another thing that happened was that both her and I were molested around that time also. My grandparents took us to Ottawa, and we were going to go to a farm and visit with these friends of my grandparents and, you know, kind of check the cows out and have a good time. And we were kind of excited about it. However, the gentleman there, and I don't know why I'm calling him a gentleman, but this person began to molest us. And he was grooming us for the fact that you don't tell anybody. So I never knew that it was happening to my sister until a number of years later. And I remember sitting on the porch telling my mom about this, who became extremely irate and angry. And it was a number of years later. And then my sister said, yeah, that happened to me too. So I share that with you because in an alcoholic home, there's a lot of denial, and there's a lot of secrecy, a lot of isolation. So when all this comes out, there's a lot of shame. And so so anyway, with that shame, what happens is we get to the place that we isolate in our homes. We don't go out with our parents' friends. The most exciting thing was to go to see our grandparents. But we kind of pulled away. I did have one neighbor, and before I knew a lot of things about this disease, I would be carrying the word around to this one neighbor in particular, telling her what was going on in my home, telling somebody that most likely could not understand. And I was glad when I finally got to the program and realized that being in a program where people understand, that's a gift. It's a gift and a real blessing. So so denial. So the person with the substance abuse is usually in denial. They don't want to believe that they have a disease any more than somebody with Alzheimer's or cancer or diabetes. And that's how I usually explain it to people in my program. They don't want to believe that they have a disease, and we don't think that we have any part in this, aside from that if the substance abuse person would quit using, things would be better in our lives. So when I got to the meeting, what I found out was that I actually had the family disease, and I'll describe the family disease in particular this way. We can't usually see, hear, feel, or otherwise perceive what may be readily apparent to others. So we have no idea that other people in society are well aware that there's something going on in our home. And survival is what we learn in our families. And so even though I was an adult at the age of 31 coming into Al-Anon, I felt pretty lost. I had no way or skills, I felt like, to live except to just survive. And growing up in that home, what I realized is I really wanted a life, a better life. I didn't want to live like this. So I go into this first meeting. They describe to me what the substance abuse disease is. And then they begin to tell us that we're really not there for that person. What we're there for is for ourselves and for our disease. And I'm sure for most people that come in the first time, that's pretty shocking, because it was pretty shocking to me. I didn't think I played a part in that, but I began to learn that focusing out here, we call this disease being emotionally, physically, and spiritually sick. And so what I needed to do was to get back and look at myself and figure out what things had happened to me and what part I played in the disease. So if I think that somebody else has a disease and I'm focused out here, I'm doing everything I can do, and in our disease we call it controlling and manipulating to get things to be the way that we want them to be. Unfortunately, that's not my part in life. It's not for me to do that to somebody else. And we all have the dignity and right to have a life of our own and to make the choices that we like to make in our lives, no matter what those choices are. And today, I think it's important to take responsibility for the choices that we make. So I began to learn that that I had a compulsion or obsession with other people. I was a very good caretaker, a pretty good fixer. And really, but the thing is, I couldn't fix anything. People would talk to me about their problems because I was a really good listener, but I had no idea what to tell them. And it was not my place to tell them, and today I know that. But my disease is thinking that if I can tell them, I'm going to relieve them and of their burden. Meanwhile, I don't even know how to tell myself what I need to tell myself or get answers for myself. So we're surviving in this family that we've grown up in, and I'm kind of going back and forth, and you'll have to bear with me. We have no idea what to expect in these families. And one of the things is we feel helpless and confused, never knowing what to expect. So I remember going to school, and I think I was about 11 or 12, and I remember coming home on the bus and thinking to myself, something terrible is going to happen. And with all the chaos and drama going in my family, that was a pretty significant thing. Something terrible was going to happen. And that feeling of It was kind of a gut feeling, an intuition, but it became a cycle. It was my anxiety and fear that were coming out. Now, you have to remember that I don't identify with my feelings, so all I know is something, this intuition is something terrible is going to happen, and then something would happen. My dad would get a DUI or a DWI, and we wouldn't even really know about it, except I'd wake up in the middle of the night hearing my mom talking to my dad and about what are we going to do about this, because he drove for a living and had to have a license, and that was years ago. So that was a cycle for me, and today I can tell you through my program that's pretty much broken. I don't feel that way anymore, but it really, the anxiety and fear are there sometimes, and I have tools to deal with it through the Al-Anon program. Al-Anon is a 12-step program, as is AA. And let's see. So at the age of 31, I came into Al-Anon, and I began to hear other people talking about these things, and I began to start thinking back about what had happened in my life. As I told you, I came into the Adult Children of Alcoholics group, and I realized that having grown up in that home, I think I was a late teenager, early 20s. All of a sudden, I realized that I needed to quit focusing on myself so much, worrying about myself and what was going to happen to me. And I really think it was a higher power thing. And that meant that I started paying attention to other people. I took interest in other people, and that was a gift or a blessing, but it was not easy with all the drama and chaos going on. So at one point, I started taking an interest in others and becoming more positive than negative in my life, because that was also characteristic in our family. There was a lot of negativity going on. Ain't the world awful? The cup is half empty instead of the cup is half full. So I wanted to live instead of survive, and I've come into this adult children program. My parents, they raised us in a Christian home. We'd go to church, and one time I remember coming home, and I remember my dad turning around to us in the back seat and saying, "What did you get out of that sermon or talk?" So we each gave him that description of what we'd gotten out of it, and he said, "Oh, no, that's not what you should have gotten," and he proceeded to tell us what he had gotten. So that's kind of interesting. So I came in, when I was in the church, what happened was a lot of people went, or it felt as if people went because it was an obligation. And so I started looking for a place to go to church where I could celebrate my faith, even though I'll tell you that I had a lot of doubts about faith. And those can still come up for me, and I say that saying to myself, these doubts are what make my faith stronger. So anyway, I started looking for some place to celebrate my faith. And then, let's see here. So I came into Al-Anon, and I started looking at steps 1, 2, and 3. So step 1 is admitted I'm powerless over alcohol. And in my meetings, I share not only am I powerless over alcohol, but I'm powerless over people, places, things, circumstances, and situations. And why do I say that? I say that because that says to me all the things I was doing before I went to the program, to Al-Anon, and that was part of my disease, and I need to remember that, along with the serenity prayer, that God grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference. So, you know, I looked at those things, and those are the beginning of my recovery. Let's see here. Let me tell. The other thing that I'm going to share with you is that I met my husband And we, 3 or 4 months after I got into the program, things got more complicated in my life. We both brought our own baggage. He was in the program, I was in the program, but we brought our own baggage. And it was a struggle. We knew each other for about 3 years, and then we got married. And my husband has 2 children, and they're adults now, and we have 9 grandchildren. So at that point, I thought, I need somebody with a strong program. And Adult Children of Alcoholics and Al-Anon was fairly new. And so I started going to Al-Anon. And as my significant other would say, getting a black belt in Al-Anon. So anyway, so in 2013, one morning I got up. I was headed out the door to do something. I took a drink of water. I'd fallen the previous week, and I had a huge bruise on my hip. I'd been kind of laying around. I wasn't working. And when I took that drink of water, all of a sudden, I felt extremely dizzy and felt like I was going to pass out. I got down on the floor, and then I started vomiting. I had no idea what was going on. I just knew something was wrong. So eventually, my husband, who was in the bedroom, came in and helped me up, and we called an ambulance, and they took me to the hospital. And I had a cardiac cath. And the doctor looked at me and said, well, we have some good news and some bad news. What do you want to hear first? I said, I don't know. Just tell me. And so he said, well, your blood vessels are all clean. You don't have a problem with that cardiac disease at this point. But we think you might have a blood clot. A pulmonary embolus. And for me, they called mine a saddle pulmonary embolus because where your trachea is and then where it branches off to both lungs, this huge clot had formed in there and caused every time I would breathe or at times when I would breathe, I couldn't get air in. And then I would feel like I was going to pass out. Eventually, The doctor said, well, we want to do a test. They gave me medicine for clotting. It's kind of an extensive story. I began coding. And if you don't know what coding is, I began to die. I had to have them resuscitate me 7 different times. And in 24 hours, they had to wait until that clotting medicine or anti-clotting medicine wore off before they could do anything else. So the next day after they'd intubated me, my husband's in the room, and the doctor said to him, we have to operate or she's going to die. And so he looked at me, and I just shook my head up and down. I thought, I just want to get on with this. So so anyway, it was a while before I recovered. I was in the ICU for 7 days and couldn't get the breathing tube out. It was pretty scary. And at that point, I used my program. I prayed a lot. Even though I was unconscious, I was praying. I needed somebody to be there for me, and my higher power was there. So today what I can tell you is I have more peace, love, and joy in my life than you could ever possibly imagine. And I get support from the meetings. I invite any of you to come and visit our meetings just to see what Al-Anon is about. And I thank you for having me here today.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you would like more information about this ministry or Church of the Resurrection, visit our website at core.org/recovery, where you can find a listing of support groups that meet every Thursday. If you would like more immediate attention, our congregational care ministries have several support options such as prayer requests, counseling, etc. at core.org/care. Thank you for listening today.